You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. It's day two of the question and answer phase of President Trump's impeachment trial. We'll look at what was asked and what we learned coming up. First, between 1999 and 2017, the number of deaths reportedly caused, at least in part by alcohol, rose 51% nationwide. That's according to an analysis released this month by the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. Out of that group, the death rate among women went up much more sharply than among men, though men still experience alcohol-related deaths at a much higher clip than women. Now, this kind of news would be a big motivator for America's nationwide anti-alcohol political lobby, if it existed. But as our next guest writes in a recent piece, while there are strong advocacy groups for and against a wide variety of products and activities, there's a big gap where the alcohol temperance movement used to be. Olga Kazan recently wrote about the history of anti-alcohol politics in the U.S. for The Atlantic. Olga's a staff writer there covering health and science. Olga, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this is a really interesting perspective you have in this piece. What made you notice the absence of this anti-alcohol political movement?
Yeah, I think I just noticed that whenever people on Twitter or just even in real life, you know, talk about drinking less or, you know, the downsides of alcohol, people kind of tend to shout them down and say, you know, you're a buzzkill or why don't you like to have any fun? And it's kind of interesting because there are actually groups that oppose every other kind of like supposedly fun thing. but alcohol seems to have this kind of free reign.
Yeah, you went hunting for anti-alcohol advocacy groups. What did you find? Nothing really taking it on head on nationwide.
Yeah, there's not really like a strong group that suggests that nobody should drink alcohol or that alcohol should be banned. That doesn't really exist at all. There's a group called Alcohol Justice, which supports tighter limits on alcohol sales and advertising. So things like bars closing at earlier hours, you know, or less advertising for liquor stores and things like that. And there's also Mothers Against Drunk Driving, but they really only oppose drunk driving. They don't oppose alcohol in general.
And that's not necessarily normal in American history. Once upon a time, anti-alcohol activism was huge. People voted based on it. People ran for office based on it. Can you talk about the past there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you had the whole temperance movement, you know, that this is, you know, it was a 13-year ban on alcohol that ended in 1933. You know, the Women's Christian Temperance Union, which was the original prohibitionist group, it had 2 million members in 1920. You know, this was really a big point of debate. You know, should people be drinking? Should alcohol be, you know, something that you can easily buy? And that just debate has completely gone away.
What happened? Was it just all prohibition happened and then went away?
Yeah, well, people often say that, you know, well, prohibition didn't work, and so now we don't have it anymore. But it's a little bit more complicated than that. So prohibition did go away. It did fail. The Women's Christian Temperance Union is like a small, much smaller organization that and is mostly active, it appears, in other countries. But essentially, there, you just kind of had this slow transition of the country, kind of seeing alcohol as more of a personal problem. So if you drink too much, it's sort of your kind of responsibility and to get it, you know, resolved. And also, you know, the work of the alcohol lobby and beer makers to promote alcohol as a fun beverage that is really a you know, a wholesome part of American life.
I want to hit a point you just made there. It sounds like we moved it from a category of a social problem, the prevalence of alcohol, to an individual health and psychology problem. And that's a pretty big change.
Yeah, so Alcoholics Anonymous came around in 1935, and it really created this, or kind of pioneered this disease model of alcoholism, which a lot of medical, you know, people in the medical community say is correct, that alcoholism is a medical disorder. But at the same time, they kind of promoted this idea that if you're an alcoholic, you should go to meetings, you should keep yourself accountable. You know, the only person who could make you change is yourself. That's a very different message than we're all drinking too much, so let's pass some laws to make us drink less.
Talking to Olga Kazan from The Atlantic. She recently wrote about the past and present of anti-alcohol politics here in the United States. There isn't much of it in modern-day America, she writes. Olga, let's talk about the people we drank. I drank. The people who don't consider themselves alcoholics. And so there's no problem. But you started looking at what's out there in the health world. And maybe there is a little bit of a problem even beyond sheer alcoholism.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, a lot of people drink. I also drink, for the record. and it's, most people can drink in moderation without a problem. But actually, kind of according to the health community, the safest amount of alcohol to have is none. It really increases your risk of breast cancer. As you mentioned, the number of alcohol-related deaths are climbing. It has a really negative impact on things like liver disease, heart failure, dementia, 7 types of cancer, and of course, fetal alcohol syndrome if you're pregnant while you're drinking. So really, the health community out there is no longer really promoting that nightly glass of red wine. They're mostly saying, maybe you just shouldn't drink at all.
Right. We had this abundance of studies for a while there, it seemed like, that said, hey, yeah, moderate drinking might actually have health benefits. But you also write to some of the research was done by groups funded by the alcohol industry.
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the ways that the alcohol industry has really opened up American society to drinking, which is that they provide grants to scientists whether intentionally or kind of subconsciously, a lot of those scientists went on to find health benefits to drinking. So the most recent example of this was the NIH, which shut down a study on alcohol after the New York Times found that it was actually funded by alcohol companies. So you have these conflicts of interest that are kind of maybe making alcohol out to be healthier than it actually is.
Now, you wrote this piece, and you're not advocating for return to prohibition or anything like that, but there's something about the way we think about alcohol that we seem pretty conflicted about. I don't know. What do you make of our attitude toward alcohol these days?
Yeah, I'm definitely not advocating for prohibition. Like I said, I do drink. It is interesting. We don't really have a lot of discussion about alcohol taxes. Alcohol could stand to be more expensive. It is more expensive in a lot of other countries. We don't really talk about, shutting down bars at earlier hours, certainly not in D.C. where I live. I'm just sort of curious why there's kind of not a big discussion about this kind of significant health factor that is all around us all the time.
We're talking to Olga Kazan, who covers health and science for The Atlantic. We're talking about the relative lack of anti-alcohol advocacy. There's no big anti-alcohol lobby. And there's not a big conversation, she writes, in America today about the downsides of drinking. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think? Do you think that there should be more of a movement, maybe not to ban alcohol, but more anti-alcohol policies, raising taxes, more advocacy about the health risks of drinking, even if you're not an alcoholic? Are you a non-drinker yourself? Is it tough to be out there in social situations when you're not drinking, especially maybe in a state like Wisconsin? Do you think that there is too much of an alcohol culture in our state, in our country, or not? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Olga Kazan from The Atlantic. We're talking about the anti-alcohol movement in the United States, once a really big thing in the country, now not so much. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about how alcohol is treated, talked about, regulated, advertised, experienced, maybe compared to cigarettes, marijuana, and other drugs? What questions do you have for our guest? What thoughts do you have about the way we drink, the way we think about drinking, the way we talk about it, the way we advertise it? And do we need changes in policy one way or another? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Mary is with us in Greendale. Mary, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to call and let you know that we actually, my sisters and I, we just did and are finishing up dry January. And I think it was very eye-opening what it is that not just myself, but my sisters and I all kind of realized what was going on in society and how much alcohol is really part of socializing. And while I didn't feel any of the benefits of not drinking, and there's a lot of websites out there, you know, week two, you should be feeling more energy and everything. I'm not sure I drank that much that I really could have felt it. But I do know that there are people out there that just, I mean, it's just a complete eye-opening experience. If you go on an airplane and you're in first class, you get a free glass of champagne. If you go out with friends, you know, everybody's drinking before, during, and after the meal. If you, you know, go and do pretty much anything, football parties, you name it. And what I also thought was interesting is when people found out that I wasn't drinking, they also didn't drink either.
Interesting. Mary, thank you so much for sharing that. This is a big thing, it seems like, Olga, lately, this dry January thing. And as Mary discovered, a lot of people are using it and then rethinking their relationship with alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of where the movement took off. Is that alcohol can, you know, decrease your productivity. It can make you have low energy. So people are trying to experiment with, well, what happens if I just remove this, this kind of crutch from my life for a little while? And it can be, you know, harder than you might expect because, as she mentioned, it is so intertwined in every gathering and every get together and, relaxing after work and so much of our lives, alcohol plays a part.
And she said something that I hadn't thought of. Thanks a lot for that call. A social contagion of not drinking, because I usually think of it the other way around, like, oh, if everybody around me is drinking, then it's normal, so I might as well, too. She says just by mentioning that she wasn't drinking, it inspired other people to, at least at that one instance, not have a drink. Have you seen it working that way?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that that can happen, you know, where you have this effect where it's like, oh, I'm not drinking and I'm trying to get these benefits. And then other people maybe want, you know, the benefits of trying that out as well. Or maybe they just feel awkward because, you know, it's not necessarily as fun to be the one slightly tipsy person in a social gathering. You kind of want everyone at that same level. So maybe that's what was going on there.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll go back to your calls now. Alex is with us in Appleton. Alex, hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Alex?
Yeah. I'm a 28-year-old individual, and what I was able to observe, you know, living in Wisconsin is from a young age, the normalization of how often or how common it is to have a drink, whether it's after work, you got the Packer game going on the weekend or Monday night football, you know, whatever it may be. You know, I come to notice that, you know, adding a drink into the mix has never been a cause for concern, let alone a question, because, you know, just from personal experience, you know, just having a drink after work, winding down, whatever that excuse may be tied to it, I see that, you know, it's something that...
I'll jump in, Alex. You're breaking up a little bit, but we get your point, Olga. This guy, and you know, this is a Wisconsin thing too, but I imagine it's around the country. He says the normalization of drinking. It's any occasion. It's not weird to drink. Do you see that elsewhere in the country?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I live in D.C., which I think has the highest rate of alcohol consumption or possibly alcohol drinkers in the nation. And yeah, the thing to do here really is after work drinks. There's so many bars. We all ride the metro, so we don't have to worry about driving. And that is definitely the norm. And if you're bucking that norm, you know, honestly, that can also be actually more inconvenient than just going along with the crowd and drinking. So I think that's definitely a thing in a lot of parts of the country.
And you also mentioned something that mentioned in your piece, that idea that, hey, after work, I'm drinking to wind down. And we have the idea that drinking is stress relief. And on social media, there's all sorts of jokey things like, ha ha, my stress solution is the wine or whatever. You looked at what research is out there. Is alcohol a good stress cure?
No, unfortunately, it's not. Yeah, a lot of people think it's good for their anxiety, but it kind of has a boomerang effect on anxiety where initially it might relieve it, but it actually makes it worse after the fact. So a lot of people, when they drink a lot, they might say they have next day anxiety. And that's kind of from that boomerang effect that alcohol has.
We'll go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Rick is with us in Holman. Rick, hello.
Hello there.
What do you want to tell us about, Rick?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to mention that in March I'll be 40 years sober.
Wow.
And back in my
teens and 20s, I drank 3 to 4 quarts of Jack Daniels or vodka a day. And what got me sober is I checked myself into the hospital for 30 days, and I went straight to AA. And there is no doubt in my mind that AA for the last 40 years has kept me sober. When I was still working before I retired, we'd have cocktail parties, you know, at work, and I could only stand in there for maybe half an hour, even after all these years.
Wow.
And then I would just kind of slide out.
Rick, thank you so much. Glad you're still with us, and congratulations being 40 years sober in just a couple months. Olga, it can be, as he said, a challenge, even if you know you have a problem with problem drinking. There's so many, like you said, that workplace cocktail party, it's hard for people to stay away from it.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, joints and marijuana have never actually caused a lethal overdose, but you know, most companies do offer, you know, work, or many companies offer work happy hours where, you know, you can really end up drinking a lot. So it is kind of interesting the kind of different approach we have for alcohol versus other substances.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Olga Kazan from The Atlantic. A recent piece she wrote looks at the absence of a big anti-alcohol lobby political movement in the United States. Olga, by the way, has a book coming out called Weird, The Power of Being an Outsider in an Insider World. Hope to have you back to talk about that in a little while. Olga, let's go back to our callers now. Brian is with us in Appleton. Brian, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Thanks. Good.
For taking my call.
What'd you want to tell us about, Brian?
Yeah, although I imbibe once in a while in a glass of wine, this last year has been really hard for my family, as my brother in his 50s, we see his life fall apart from the, you know, the overuse of alcohol, and lost his job, his apartment, and pretty much had to help him pick himself back up, and spent 3 months in recovery up in Green Bay, and he's about 8 months sober, but it's still a very fragile time. But you know, I'm starting to see the world through his eyes, where it's like every commercial, every other commercial's alcohol and beer or in billboards, and it's constantly advertised, where I would feel someone in recovery that would make it very difficult. You know, my question is, any legislation coming down where alcohol is treated the same as, you know, cigarettes or drugs in our media and our social media and our commercials, you know, the Super Bowl, you know, any progress towards that?
Brian, thanks for the call. Olga, do you see movements in that direction?
Yeah, I mean, so that's one of the main things that Alcohol Justice is really pushing for, is to have things like billboards, commercials, things like that be more tightly regulated, somewhat like we have with cigarettes, where, you know, you don't see those advertisements, you know, during the Super Bowl. But it doesn't seem to really be picking up a lot of steam. Like, I haven't really seen anything in the health policy world, people talking about this. I just don't really see it being taken up, at least not at a national level. So, that's kind of where things are at right now.
Yeah, I'll say here on the show, I've talked to public health advocates who are calling for this kind of thing, but feeling like they're a voice in the wilderness. And again, there's not really much of a movement that's going to pick up those public health issues and try to turn it into law, it seems like, Olga. And do you see any sign that that's going to change anytime soon?
Well, I mean, the thing is, the beer and alcohol lobby is very powerful. Like, so this, you know, they spend a lot of money. They donate to a lot of political candidates. There's just a lot of different, you know, beer wholesalers. There's craft breweries. Craft breweries are a huge part of local economies. Alcohol sales are a huge part of the restaurant business. It's just really hard for policymakers to go against a lot of these interests that honestly do spend a lot of money to preserve kind of the free reign of alcohol.
Time for one more caller, I think. Pat is with us in Madison. Pat, hello.
Hi. Yeah, I moved from California about 6 years ago to Madison, and I was intrigued by the reality of reading articles and realizing that the DUI rates actually in Wisconsin have some of the highest counties in the entire country. And yet the legislation that's out there that actually penalize people isn't that high. Not that you just put people in jail, but the reality is that people aren't being penalized as high like in a place like California. And, well, if you're not being penalized, people have multiple DUIs here, I'm seeing, to the point where I've seen people drink beer driving down my residential street. And I think that's just kind of crazy here. It's something totally different than what I grew up with.
Pat, thanks for the call. And Olga, unfortunately, Wisconsin known for drunk driving, as Pat was saying. That is the one, and you touched on this earlier, that's the one element of alcohol, at least, where there is a fairly significant national movement to try to pass laws on drunk driving.
Yeah. Mothers Against Drunk Driving is really pushing against, any type of tipsy driving, drunk driving. That's their core thing. But yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, in a lot of these places where there's a strong beer culture or wine culture, if they don't have public transportation, you might see people actually getting behind the wheel, anyway.
Thanks a lot for that call. Olga, in our last minute or so, do you see people, as you've talked to people about this, I imagine you've heard a lot after this piece came out. Do you hear from a lot of people saying, you know, at the very least, can we make more space for the non-drinkers out there to not have to feel like they're not part of the fun if they're not drinking?
Yeah, I was a little afraid after I published this that people would get really mad at me for trying to take away their beer. But I heard from a lot of people who are sober, and they said, you know, thanks for writing this article, because I do feel like alcohol is everywhere. It's in all the ads. You know, it's in all the work happy hours. It's just all around me. And it's nice to know that I'm not crazy and that it's, you know, there's a reason behind this.
Olga, thanks again for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That's Olga Kazan. She covers health and science for The Atlantic. We talked to her today about some of the history of anti-alcohol advocacy in the United States, why there's much less today than there used to be. There's no modern equivalent of the temperance movement of, say, 100, 150 years ago. You can keep sharing your thoughts, by the way, on the American alcohol culture, on Wisconsin's in particular, if you want. Email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us @CentralTimeWPR.